This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 26 minutes to 12 o'clock. And we're going to reflect on protest in a democratic South Africa. Short time ago, you would have heard the interview with the commissioner of the South African Human Rights Commission talking to us about the culture of protest activity in South Africa. He recorded 14,000 or so protests happening almost annually here in South Africa, most of them related to issues around service delivery. Now, the Nelson Mandela Foundation has partnered with the Socioeconomic Rights Institute, you know it as SERI, in launching this exhibition entitled Insurgent Citizens, Reflections on Protest in Democratic South Africa, and it's happening at the Foundation's Center of Memory. And what it is intended to do is to get us to all talk about our constitutionally protected right to protest, the limits to that right, and how to appreciate ways of taking part in protest, how to support it, how to respond to it. And so in the spirit of Human Rights Day, we're taking this time to look at why this exhibition comes at a perfect time during South Africa's discourse. It is a pleasure to have Vern Harris with me, the Director of Archive and Dialogue at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and Edward Molopi, who is the Community Research and Advocacy Officer for SERI. Nice to have both of you with us in our studio today. My opening to my show this morning was about the airbrushing of history and a reclamation, at least from my perspective, which I know is subjective, that today's Sharpeville Day. It's, in my mind, not Human Rights Day. And there was a whole explanation as to why. But we are here in this moment, so many years after 1960, to talk about the themes and the shape and form of protest over the longest time in our history, to a moment like today, where even though we live in a different dispensation, in a different country, many of our experiences have caused or triggers in our society, which, you know, lead to people being on the street. And I'd like for you maybe to start with Vern Harris by just sharing with us how this exhibition came to be and coming together in the way that it did.
Thanks, Simon. Well, we've been talking about this particular exhibition for about a year as we conceptualized it, and it flowed directly out of our work on poverty and inequality in the last 3 years, particularly the Mandela Initiative on Poverty and Inequality. And we were looking to do an exhibition which would express the frustration that we felt through this project when looking at the continuing structural violence that the great majority of South Africans experience on a day-to-day basis. Those patterns of power, of privilege, and of wealth accumulation that have developed over centuries haven't really shifted substantially. And this is why we believe there's so much anger in our society and why there is so much protest action. And we wanted to engage with that, but also to ensure that people who come to the foundation to engage with the memory and dialogue work that we do are jolted and are confronted by that reality.
You talk about jolting, which I think is so important, Edward, and let me direct that aspect to you. It is 25 years. We're celebrating 25 years of our democracy. But depending on who you ask, the landscape of experience has not changed materially for people in terms of where they live, what they experience, and what access they have. And in some ways, it goes to explain that anger that Vern Harris just talked about. What are the triggers for anger in your experience through the putting together of this exhibition and the compendium of stories you've heard?
So, from the work that we've done, and we've done a number of research projects that look particularly at communities and their struggles for being heard, basically, right? So a lot of the, what one of the reasons that we put together the exhibition was so that we have a conversation with the public around the nature of protest and why people do protest. And one of those reasons is because people are simply not being heard, right? One of the issues that we highlight in the exhibition is that protest is not necessarily at all times the first point of reference that people resort
to. We actually saw this in Vuwani, to be honest.
Yeah. So the people resort to petitions, they resort to dialogue, they speak to people, they engage, but then they're not being heard. And so protest becomes one form where they try and get heard. So it basically that's essentially one of the reasons that we are seeing people actually taking to the streets.
Maybe it goes to the question that Advocate Thuli Madonsela raised at the launch of the exhibition. After 25 years, South Africans still have to fight for basic things, and then ask the question, what went wrong? And so we have this idea when protests happen of a kind of national anger against the anger or backlash to the anger. Why destroy institutions? You know, you're going to put us back so many different years. And we're very quick to proffer opinions as to the route this could have gone, and it didn't. But the liability for blame we place on those who are protesting, not on a perforation or a paralysis of a system. And I wonder how this moment interacts with those themes in really giving legitimacy to the voice of protest.
I'll give it a first shot, but come in. For us, in terms of the timing, I think the significance has to do with the imperative right now to be cleaning up a lot of mess from the last decade, but also to fix broken institutions and broken systems. The danger for us is that by focusing on those imperatives, we forget about the fundamental transformation that our society is still waiting for, and which for me, as I read the protests, whether they're on university campuses or whether they're in the streets or in factories, is our people are demanding that transformation now.
Ed?
Yeah, I mean, South Africa is experiencing fundamental structural inequality, and that's also we see that being being expressed in a number of conversations that people are having, and that's also part of what people, when they protest, it's saying that we want equality, we are requesting that we need to be heard, we need to be seen, and we need to be at the same platform as everybody else in this constitutional democracy that we are having. And the structures that we have in place need to speak to that reality.
You know, if you look at pictures from the exhibition, and what strikes me is just how crisp and stark, you know, pictures are one-dimensional, I suppose, but you can hear them. In reenacting the sounds of violence or the sounds of anger, judging from the expression on people's faces. It's a visceral interaction with the imagery of protest in our country. And yet there's a dissonance by a large proportion of people who don't live in the experience of need and want every day to be able to understand what that is about. Does this exhibition, you believe, Vern, breach that dissonance and offers an opportunity for understanding, really?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I don't think you can walk through that exhibition space without feeling moved, without feeling kind of called to respond, because there is so much emotion, so much anger, so much fear in the expressions on those faces. And just to throw this out as well, and it is a question. I've heard people walking through that exhibition asking the question, the use of violence. And there's violence from security, from police. There's violence from communities who are protesting. When you're facing deep, deep structural violence, the only way you can be heard, your point, Ed, is to be disruptive. To cut off highways, to block entrances to university campuses. And when you're in that space of disruption, violence can very easily take place.
Yeah, and I think so what the exhibition actually shows, right, is the need for structural reform. But then it also challenges this notion that the only people that protest is that angry black man in a township somewhere. But then it brings a variety of people who protest, right? So we have children protesting. We have people from different socioeconomic standings protesting. We have people from different races and gender protesting. So it also tries to bring about that. It is not, we don't have to have this narrative of one homogenous group of image or an image that we have
a in our mind. A caricature or a stereotype of protest.
Of a protester. But that we need to think broadly about protest and what it brings for us as a nation.
You know, in talking to people, and I do it often, it's my job to talk, and especially on a platform, on a program called Political School, where we really kind of excavate and we deep dive into issues around how we got here and, you know, what our histories are all about. What I've realized is we are good at eulogizing the past. We are good at, I don't want to use this word or this term and say it in a kind of throwaway fashion, but we are used to the pageantry of pain because we've seen it, for example, in the TRC. What stops something like this, Vern, which elicits the kind of reactions you've just shared with us now of being viscerally connected to what's going on there and having a moment for dialogue where people can talk? What's the distance between this moment, these feelings, and real change? Because this exhibition doesn't have the power to materially alter the context of the people who are represented necessarily, although some we could debate that. But where's its true value in shifting the needle?
Well, for our organization, I'll just speak for the Nelson Mandela Foundation. It's almost as though we're reminding ourselves of the need to go beyond what you're naming here, that kind of romanticizing of struggle and of our pasts, and to be busy building liberatory futures. So in that space now, where that exhibition is, in the last week, we've convened dialogues with community-based organizations, enabling them to connect more effectively with structures like this panel of experts on land reform, which the president has put in place. Now, that's work which potentially can change our realities. So the exhibition is really one small element in a tapestry that I think we must all take on.
And I think from the Socioeconomic Rights Institute side, right, there are a number of things that we think it achieves, but I'll just mention two. One is to bring into the public's mind the reality that protest is actually a valid and a legitimate form of democratic participation, that we should not try to limit that right for people, and that
in whatever form it presents itself,
we
because you can't manage a protest, and often the nature of protest is that it's spontaneous. Yeah. Aside from, you know, massive, you know, civil society movements or, you know, Zuma Must Fall, whatever, where there's a level of organization, there's a level of predictability as to how it will happen. Often, even though we describe them as spontaneous, they were part of a process like Vuwani. People were asked to make themselves available for conversations. But suddenly, as my mother would say, one silly day, it all just came together in this, you know, this cocktail, this incendiary cocktail of violence. So, you know, we don't know how they always happen.
True. And I think what we also try, I mean, part of the exhibition itself, right, is challenging notions of protest and how we think about protest. And we also do try and challenge this notion of a violent protest, right? And we try to say that sometimes there's disruption and there's violence. And sometimes we usually conflate the two. And we need to separate the two. And even in cases where there is violence involved, it does not always follow that the protest is violent. There are incidents of violence in the protest itself, but we can't then label the whole protest as being violent. And it's in not all cases that the violence will come from the protesters. Sometimes the violence also comes from the police and how the state responds to the protest.
Because I'm trying to understand why we create caricatures of many things in our society. Is it because we're simply too tired? There's just too much happening. So, you know, something's burning. Oh, okay, disruptive community members or whatever, you know, and tick that box. Or something else. And we seek the singular label for something that we know is definitely not a singular story. And I think what you talk about is so important, is that we have to look a little bit deeper. We have to detect and diagnose the nuance, because unless we do that, we fail on many different fronts, but significantly on understanding and on responding, Vern. You know, and it struck me, the compendium of stories that you put together during the launch, where you had Zamantungwa Khumalo, who I know well, I've worked with before, Simamkele Dlakavu from Fees Must Fall. Zamantungwa was talking about these women in Kolenzo, for example, who were arrested and detained for protesting against their local authority. We had reflections from Professor from Advocate Thuli Madonsela as well, around the Fees Must Fall movement. You know, these are all different things, but how they puzzle fit is in a context where people have gone unheard and where they've not been validated for their experience. How do we encourage South Africans, Vern, to make sure that we don't do the drive-by assessment, we don't do the fast food takeout, outsourcing our opinions to someone else and saying, that's what it was, while we all have the moral responsibility in our country to look closer, to make eye contact with the situation and to understand it for what it is.
And to embrace complexity. And we've tried in the exhibition to suggest that complexity. So, for example, you will see representations of police and security acting in ways that are really unacceptable in terms of dealing with protest. But we also have, for example, a representation of a policeman and a direct quote from what he said, which is very sympathetic to protesters in a particular community. We've also tried to tease out some of those loose threads. There are protests which are inherently unacceptable. So when a community...
Who decides?
Well, often it's the law. And it's about definitions of hate speech and so on. So when a community goes and protests against people identified as foreigners and burns down their shops. There's an example. Another example of where that line is crossed is when people are out protesting about farm murders and they display the old national flag. You've gone beyond the line there.
So, you know, as we sort of begin to create some exit points, and I'm wondering, maybe you can reflect on some of the reactions to the exhibition that you've seen and heard. I know that Vern was telling us there's been a platform of dialogue created between affected communities and places where they can amplify their agency, which I think is important, because you know, you can go to a movie, eat your popcorn, and you know, leave the mess for everyone else to clean up, and you carry on with your life. This is not that outing. This is not that. This is not entertainment. This is a reality. It's a photographic album of who we are as South Africans right now. Of course, I would encourage people to go ahead and have a look at the exhibition, which is entitled Insurgent Citizens, Reflections on Protest in Democratic South Africa. And it's happening at the Nelson Mandela Foundation Center of Memory. But what have you been hearing from people about, you know, what they've been experiencing and what this triggers for them, Edward?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially from the launch itself and what we're hearing, I mean, it's only been 2 days, but essentially, I think we are getting the sense that people are beginning to think about these things, which it's the primary purpose of the exhibition. Right?
So you have a range of panelists. So you started with Madonsela and the two women that I just mentioned as well, Simamkele Dlakavu and Zamantungwa Khumalo. Are there going to be other people? I mean, what can we expect? I'm always very excited to hear also new voices, you know, and people who are adding a reangulated perspective on something that we only understand from one point of view.
So we have publications that we've put out, right? That relate to a protest, that relate to specific like the Fees Must Fall. We've documented that and the injuries that people have sustained because of that.
I mean, who can forget Shaira Kala, right?
Yes,
50
yes.
rubber bullets, I think she took to the back. Yeah.
So those are some of the cases that are in one of the reports that we've written called A Double Harm. And so it's part of a conversation that we have already started as SARI, and we will be continuing to have in workshops, and maybe we will have at some point. It's not something that's in the immediate plan, but maybe it's something that we can consider.
we focused on the consumption aspect, or I mean, that's the wrong term, but, you know, on people who would come and who would feel a certain way and who would, because a big part of human rights is not only recognizing your right or your obstacle to access for rights, but those who are next to you who might not have the same agency as, and access as you do. So that's one part of it. But what about communities today, Vern, who will not see this exhibition? I know that you've made your best efforts to include them in that conversation. What do you say to people who today are thinking, yeah, this is supposed to be a public holiday? It's a day that is as ordinary, and you can superimpose yesterday and the 20 yesterdays before yesterday on my life today, and it's exactly the same, and I see it playing out in the same sepia tones in future. Nothing's going to change. We're living in hopelessness. We'll protest where we can, but we just don't see our lives materially changing. What message of hope is there in telling the story in this particular way for people who are living in this every day?
Wow, that is a tough question. I think hope is not helpful. If you're going to base the way you live your life on an expectation or a hope that things will be better in the future, I think you're lost. What we're needing, and it's a question, where do you find that energy from? We need a faith that keeping on with the fight, doing what needs to be done, working hard to transform the society so that the country of Madiba's dreams is ultimately realized. It's worthwhile. It matters, even if the future turns out to be really bleak.
I'm going to leave it there because you're giving me pause for thought. It's a word I use often, but I think, like faith without works, I mean, you know, hope without agency is just that. Yeah. And you know, it's in this nebulous space. I think it's a great conversation we've just had, and I hope that it encourages as many of us as possible. Is this a free exhibition?
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. Another thing that you can do, you can go to Conhill for the festival there, and you can also go down to the Nelson Mandela Foundation Center of Memory. Insurgent Citizens, Reflections on Protest in Democratic South Africa is currently running. Edward Molopi's been talking to us, as has Vern Harris. Enjoy the day, and thank you so much for stopping by.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.